All right. And if you can all just help me out, if my voice, you know, goes in or out, just let me know, like we did last week. That was really helpful. So I was feeling inspired to move more into forgiveness. And so that's the intention I was going with. And then a couple of hours ago, I sort of had another shift, and the desire was to kind of now kind of recap many of the things we've been sharing, because obviously they're all interconnected. You know, they're all forgiveness and love and peace, and following this guidance for peace. All of it is together. But I was kind of feeling like what is the purpose of all of these things that we're doing? Like, what is this all heading towards? So the idea of purpose really came to my mind. And I was reminded that when we step into this arena of, you know, forgiveness and peace and love and joy, at times it can seem like very lofty topics. I mean, they sound great, but, you know, sometimes they just seem like too much, or, you know, can't be applied here, or, you know, it looks good in a certain situation but not in another situation. And so the idea of purpose was coming to me, and I was reminded that in this whole arena of neuroscience, neuroplasticity, there is so much research that's coming out, and I wanted to kind of bring that in because I thought it ties nicely. So we'll see how this, you know, all unfolds. But specifically, they've been talking, and this is something for some of you who are familiar with Abraham Maslow. He was a psychologist many years ago, and some of you may have studied him. And he talked about this idea of peak experiences and peak moments, and that there is, once our basic needs are met, you know, for food, safety, shelter, you know, like the basic stuff, once that's met, that there's this inner desire, you can call it, or inner sort of push, momentum to have an experience of something bigger than who we just are. Now, this desire can kind of, you know, it can be followed through in different ways, right? But basically what it's pointing us to, and again, Joseph Campbell, who's a very renowned mythologist, said that, and he was someone who studied like world traditions, world spiritualities, world mythologies, you know, literally, you know, all over the world, but also like historically in Native American cultures and, you know, other cultures. He would say that, you know, it's not so much people want meaning. Like, we keep saying people want meaning, and that's fine. But people want to have that feeling of really being alive, of really, really, you know, feeling that sense of being awake to whatever is. And so we can think of that as like that peak experience where there is a sense of connection and unity with everything, that sense of timelessness, or like this transcendent, a state of transcendence. And now that they're looking at the neurochemistry, they're showing that there's like this wiring. You know, people are calling it like a wiring for transcendence or being wired for bliss, that we're moving towards that, and there are things that are needed to help us. So it's not like something that will just happen, although there is that wiring, it needs to be activated. And so all of these thoughts that we're talking about and the ideas of forgiveness and just us joining together as a community to support each other are instrumental in this transcendence. And it's almost like an evolutionary leap that we're taking. So on one hand, you know, when we look at the world, and, you know, we've talked about this a couple of weeks ago. We talked about the situation that happened in Paris and, you know, all of these events that we see that are very disturbing. So on one end, it seems like, you know, we have so much of that stuff. Like, we just seem to hear it more. But then on the other end, wherever you turn, there are these ideas of transcendence and these ideas all coming, excuse me, all of these ideas coming through. And, you know, if you go on YouTube or, you know, like meditation and spirituality and forgiveness and tools for this and people talking about it and the ability to connect with teachers all over the world that previously we would not have been able to connect to, you know, so that's really growing like phenomenally, you know, just all over. And it's almost like we're at this crossroads, right? So there's this urge for transcendence that's pushing us, and then there's this other way, which is more of fear. And so that's like a perfect scenario for what happens in our mind. And that's where I'm trying to kind of bring all these, you know, things that are seeming to be separate all together, that this place of transcendence and this place of fear are like, you can't do both, you know, you can't do both. And when I say you can't do both, I mean moment to moment. Okay, so in our lives we can see, you know, aspects where we have peace and aspects we don't. That's not what I meant. That's not what I'm saying. But moment to moment, we're making a choice. And that's really where this is all headed towards. So that's where, you know, the purpose of transcendence and the experience of that is a very personal experience, but it's also we're all interconnected. So it's almost like our evolution kind of depends on it, you know, like because Maslow would talk about, you know, once your needs are met, after that, you know, you can have more and more and more, and that's fine, but it won't really fulfill that inner desire for that sense of connection, that sense of peace, that sense of wholeness. And they've done studies, which many of you probably can quote just as I could, or the numbers better than I can, but, you know, the idea of, like, how much money after a certain amount, it doesn't really add to your happiness, you know. It really doesn't make a difference. So, and we can apply that, you know, with other things as well. So here we are, you know, we're in our world, we're in our lives, and every moment we're making a choice. Now, you could say, well, no, sometimes I'm not. I'm kind of, you know, maybe not doing anything. But this isn't just so much a choice physically, like where you're going or not going, or, you know, like did you come on this call or not come on this call, or did you, you know, I don't know, get a present for someone or not. It's not like that. It's more like in the mind, the decisions that are being made. And so attitudinal healing, A Course in Miracles, pretty much all the mindfulness traditions and, you know, most of the spiritual traditions at some level are going to be asking, you know, what is happening at the level of the mind. And so it's at that place that this is all heading towards, and it converges beautifully because with our choice, things start to happen. Now, the things that are happening, I like to think of it like a computer system. So you've got a system, there's something that's running all the time. And then there's another system that we're trying to join into. So there's like a default mechanism. And the default mechanism, if I could say that, is like our subconscious mind. It's the mind that's, you know, kind of in darkness, in fear. And so our life is running. There's a script. Things are happening. And sometimes it feels like things are happening to us. And so we don't know where it's coming from. And that's that default. It's just running. It's running. It's running. So it's like an unconscious choices, usually of fear, that are happening. And then making those conscious and then choosing again. You know, we've talked about this idea of choosing again and kind of realizing that when you're not choosing consciously, you are choosing unconsciously. So that's still happening. And there is responsibility and there is an experience and there is an outcome. So what we're doing in this kind of evolutionary leap, I see it as like, you know, we're every one of us is like bringing all of this stuff to the conscious mind. And when that happens, you get explosions. You get things that are just crazy. You get all kinds of stuff because you're like shaking up stuff, you know. Things get worse before they get better. But the hope and the grace really is that we can still make choices so that what I want to talk about is also this place of reactivity, and that's another unconscious pattern. You know, something happens, a stimulus, or something makes me upset. It has made me upset in the past. It makes me upset now. And the cycle continues, and the cycle continues. And literally, I'm a prisoner. You know, I'm a prisoner in my own mind. I don't see it that way. I see it as, you know, this happened, and so I feel this way. That happened, so I feel that way. But really, at a more deeper level, there's these unconscious choices that I've been making that I don't know that's sort of inviting these things into my experience. So the two thought systems, again, are love or fear. And making the fear conscious, bringing it to love, bringing it to light. And when I say love and light, I'm really talking about this place within you, that healer and teacher, guide, wisdom, you know, God, whatever name you want to give it, that place within you. And letting an active choice be made and letting another active choice be made. And as you do this, you know, again, it's beautiful when the biology and the science and social, everything starts to connect. Can you feel how powerful that is? I mean, that's just so powerful. It feels like it's just a simple thing in the mind. But when you make a change in the mind, you're really starting to change wiring. And as you're changing wiring, you're coming into a place where you can help others, you know, make those changes. So it really is very powerful. And it's very simple in the sense that we have the tool. You know, we have scientists teaching us. You know, there's so many teachers that are available now. There's so many tools that are present. So if anything, we have more than we ever did so many years ago, in the sense that through the internet, it's so easily available, you know. So it's almost like, you know, this evolutionary thing is here, but we also have the tools. And for me, you know, when those connections and those confluences happen, it really excites me because it confirms that, you know, these teachers that we admire, you know, Jesus, Buddha, the prophets, you know, the neuroscientists talk about them also, that their brains were just like our brains. They weren't any different, but they really had that conscious, you know, choices that they were making. And so, you know, we have the story of the Buddha sitting, before he became the Buddha, Siddhartha Gautama, sitting under the Bodhi tree and basically saying, I'm not going to get up until I understand this, until I know the truth. And we see all of these, you know, temptations and all these things that come to him. And he kind of is like, no, I want the truth. I want to understand. I want to know this bliss. You know, I want to know this, who I really am. The same thing with Jesus, you know, going into the desert for 40 days and having those experiences. So they face, you know, challenges as well. And it's like they're examples of what we can aspire to. But having said that, in A Course in Miracles, who many of us who are students of it, you know, believe comes from the teachings of Jesus, but that he says, you know, look upon me just like an elder brother. You know, don't put me on this pedestal, but see me as I can help you because I've met those challenges, and so I can show you the way. But don't separate yourself and don't feel like, oh, well, I'm just a human being or I'm just limited, because, you know, the science and this evolutionary part that I'm speaking to you about is all pointing to that we also are wired to have that same transcendent experience. And by seeing clearly that there's always two choices, fear or love, and it's the path of love that's going to connect us to that. It's like our inroad to that experience of transcendence, of peace, of joy. And so it can be complicated if we want to make it that way, or it can get more simple And here's how it can get more simple. So sometimes we're facing situations and we're like, well, I don't see it. I don't know what I'm supposed to do here. And then we can start getting into the stories and we can get very logical and we can get very analytical. And this is just where, this is where like the mind is ready to transcend seeing things that way. It's ready to kind of, you know, bring the that intellect and the heart, like bring that together. And this is where, you know, a practice of either connecting with someone else who's also, you know, applying similar ideas like we're doing today, or, you know, really establishing more and more connection to your inner guide, your inner wisdom, and asking questions, you know. So really like, okay, you know, show me how when I'm seeming to make these choices and I don't see it clearly, like something that looks like whatever it looks like, show me what it really is. What is the real choice here? You know, and keep asking until, you know, that understanding comes to you, and kind of like expect that understanding to come, because it's almost like a muscle. And so, you know, you're exercising and you have an expectation. You're going to do a certain number of repetitions. You're going to, you know, move yourself a certain way. So this is kind of like this inner muscle, and we want to go into it in a very kind of like, you know, very practical, very kind of like, this is here for me, you know, and so I want to do this, and the help is here. And so asking these questions, you know, show me how I can see this. Show me how this way would be helpful, or which way would be helpful. I don't even know. You know, I don't even know what would be helpful. And so I think it's like that, those kind of questions, again, it's wiring, right? It's all wiring. So as opposed to kind of being outer-centered and always trying to fix things, we're really, like, again, this evolutionary leap is, like, asking us to get more and more inner-centered and to be asking those kind of questions. And then things open up, you know, things open up. So this, of course, all, you know, connects to forgiveness, because love and forgiveness, you know, if you can, if you love, there has to be forgiveness. If you forgive, there has to be love. So really that path of love is so, you know, they're like sisters, right? You know, you're going to have one, you're going to have the other. But today I just wanted to connect that the two thought systems are distinct, and that we're always making a choice, and that we want to make these choices consciously, you know, as best as we can. Okay, that's my piece, and I want to, actually, I want to open it up, but I just want to share a story. This is like, actually, I received a Christmas card from a woman who I've known now for maybe 15 years. I've known her since I moved to Rochester, and she's a Catholic nun. And she and another nun were sharing an apartment that was, like, they were my neighbors before I moved to where I'm living now. And I just have really wonderful memories of them. The reason I bring it up is because I'm so inspired by their example. And I got a card from them, and they were talking, well, one of them wrote it, and it turns out that she's needed to move from where she was living into this, it's called like the Mother's House. Some of you who are local to Rochester may know it's here in Pittsford, and it's the Sisters of St. Joseph. And so I'm going to read. So she says, for the 13 years that she and her other, the other nun lived in an apartment, I was alone most of the day while this other person was at work. And now living with many people is a change that has its perks and its problems. There is always the opportunity to interact with others when that seems comfortable, but also many quiet places to be alone. I help with the gift shop. I sew some items that have become so popular in the shop that I'm finding it a challenge to keep up. And so she goes on to talk about her experiences. And I was thinking about her because, you know, she was living in this very independent way. And she was a nun, but she was also a math teacher and had written math textbooks and everything. So was very active. You know, there were many times where she would give me rides to the airport and help me with my son and all of that. And so I was thinking about how this was such a big change for her to go into this kind of group setting and, you know, what that was like. But it's so beautiful that, again, it shows your perspective, right? How are you going to see something? And so she found this opportunity to do some sewing and to be in the gift shop. And then she writes here that, "I pray that each of you experience joy, not just at Christmas, but throughout each day. God's love surrounds you. It is easy to get caught up in the needs and challenges of daily life, to let the pain and disappointments take over our thinking. But take the time to see the miracles that surround you every day. The beauty of a flowering plant or a gentle snowfall, the magic of a seedling pushing up through hard soil, the pleasure of beautiful music or a bird song, the gentle smile of a friend or a stranger, joy of the sun breaking through on a cloudy day." And I just thought it was really beautiful because it speaks. So this woman, she must be in her 80s now, I think. She must be like 85, 86 or something. And it just speaks to a life that's been lived where these active choices have been made in the mind, you know, very consciously. And now she's at these corner at this, you know, time in her life where she can't be as independent as she was. And so, you know, life is moving at whatever it is, but here's a way to move in it that's just, you know, with grace and with love and with inspiration. So anyway, it was funny, this card came today, and I just thought I wanted to just, you know, share that because I felt it was, the timing was good. Okay, so that's my piece. So I'm going to now just, you know, whoever would like to share or comment, you know, please do.
I think it's kind of hard to be the first one. You said so many things that I'm really thinking about, and I had been thinking before you started talking about, you know, you move forward and you take the leaps and you try to, you know, face with integrity different issues, and then I think also if you have the courage and you do something like that, you have to take these little rests. I find I have to forgive myself for the fact that I'm not doing anything. And it's like, no, you just did a bunch of stuff. Which kind of fits with what you're saying.
Yeah, and the doing is also, as we were saying, it's so much in the mind, right? The shifts that happen in the mind are so powerful.
Yes, and I almost need, you know, kind of like sometimes you just eat junk food. I need some junk time sometimes after these powerful experiences.
Yes, it's like, you know, like an evolutionary leap. If you think about it, I think about like a child, you know, learning to walk or do something. And we've seen it, like when a child has a growth spurt, they'll often sleep more. Right? They'll just rest more, or they'll need to, you know, have that downtime. So absolutely. Yeah, I feel like we are still, I mean, the thing is that we don't stop growing, you know, unless we want to. And then remember, there's a default mechanism. So we don't want to involute, right? We want to, so absolutely, whatever it needs, rest, downtime is all like nurturing. It's all good. It's all good.
Well, science, like you said, has found that what Freud said thought that when we were around 21 years of age, that our thought process and our brain stopped growing and stopped maturing. But science has found that the brain and the neuroplasticity of the brain is always there, and you can change your brain, like you said, you can change the wiring of your brain, like you said, at any time until from the day you're born until the day you die.
And that's right.
I think science, as of now, is coming closer and closer to spirituality, because a lot of the things that they're finding out about the human brain and the mind and the way people develop and everything, and goes back to what the ancients said and what's been said for centuries. And it's all coming together, and I would dare to say that within the next, because science and medicine have made such great leaps within the last 50 years or so, I would say that within the next 50 years, I would think that the leaps that they will make then will almost prove that we were always on the right track, and we were always, and it was, and most of the things that we've said, like happiness comes from within, forgiveness comes from within, love comes from within, everything that happens to you actually comes from within. Nothing comes from without. So, and I think science is coming closer and closer and closer to the things that the ancients have said for centuries. And that's all I have to say, Ed.
Yeah, and to add to that, I just wanted to add to that because I remember reading, and this is again and again, that the best diets are the traditional ethnic diets. They're not the modern diets that we throw together. Like if you see, you know, what the Native Americans used to eat, what the Indians, Japanese, Chinese are traditionally eating, they were eating what was healthy for their body. This is the ancient wisdom. And somehow we knew it, and then we lost it. And what you just said about science, we're rediscovering this. We kind of have to go back and practice it and live it in order to be whole and discover ourselves as whole. So I think, there's a bit of a gap now in living that. Having the knowledge is one thing, but actually living it is something else. But yeah, you're absolutely right. I think that we are discovering that a lot of ancient wisdom is really right on target, no matter what culture. So
I think science has found also this out, that the indigenous people of here in America, the Native Americans, the indigenous people like in Australia and places like that, and down in South America, the Amazon basin and places like that, the indigenous people have always had respect for the earth, respect for their fellow man.
Yes.
They've always been close. They've always been a lot closer to what the ancient Eastern cultures have taught for years, and they've been close to the earth and everything. And they haven't needed, in all these years, they haven't needed any of the things that in modern America that we think we have to have, or we're not going to be happy and not have a good life.
Right. I'll just say two things and then one thing, and then I don't want to dominate. I just, adding to that, I mean, what you just said about the earth, see, when I say we need to live and practice it, this is what I mean. Like, we have really, unfortunately, destroyed the environment and the earth. So now we have to come back to the truth and really try to live in a way that is, with cars and whatever we can do, recycling, that is a healthier way of living to save our planet, to save the earth, to save the environment. So again, the knowledge and then also really trying to live that in our thinking and in our actions and behavior. It's an important it's important that we're discovering that. That's an important step towards shifting in terms of the way we're thinking. So anyway, that's it.
Okay, so Actually, I just wanted to welcome someone else. Rajiv, can you hear us? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, yes. Okay. This is actually Rajiv. He's joining from India. So this is kind of neat, you know, that we have this capacity. So he's joining in through the internet through India. So welcome.
Thank you.
Great. Okay, so let's try, you know, it's wonderful to have these ideas about diet and about the environment, and I think certainly, you know, those are places where we're all going to move into whatever is appropriate, you know, wherever we are, you know, with cars and hybrid cars and all of that. But I want to not veer too much off, because I really still want to come back to the choices that are made at the level of the mind. Because, right, that's where it starts, right? So if I can feel that connection that these people had, you know, Native Americans, we refer to their culture, then that's going to influence my behavior, right? I'm going to come from a different place than when I don't feel that. So so how about kind of thinking about what are the ways that when we're looking at situations, like we said, okay, so what does it mean to live this? So what does that mean then? What does it mean to be living these ideas then? Or if someone has some situation that they're facing, or let's try to make it, you know, very practical and very immediate to what we're facing, and not get off, you know, too much away from, like, what's right in front of us. Because I feel that makes it, you know, kind of, it stays with us better.
Seema, I have just before, hi, everyone, this is Aiko. And I have, just before the call, I had this experience that was exactly what you were talking about. I experienced this kind of like a joint pain, and then I started to think about my mind went to the reason why I'm having this joint pain, and it went from all these reasons, like, well, because I've been eating a lot of dairy, to I'm flaring up because I'm too tired, or all these reasons why I was having this pain. And then I started to catch myself, and then my mind went to this word came up in my mind, which was a choice between not eating and eating dairy, or choice between maybe the reason, or the reason why I wanted to eat this food that I thought was going to cause the pain. And then it went down and down on the path of, like, where did this begin? Like, where did it really start? So here I am having this pain, and then I'm thinking that, well, that's because I've been eating cheese. And then it went from that, well, why did I eat cheese? Well, that's because I was feeling deprived, because I think that I can't eat cheese, and I feel deprived, so I eat it. And, you know, it went like that down in this path of, like, why, where did this start? And it boiled down to really feeling, maybe feeling, like, insecure or unsafe or not satisfied. And it really came from that place of lack. So then I just kind of saw myself making these little decisions based on that beginning part where I felt deprived, I felt maybe lonely, or I felt bored, or, you know, all these places of, like, I don't have something, or I'm not whole. Mm-hmm. I needed something to fulfill me. And when I kind of took that step of, like, going down and deeper into this questioning, it just sort of, it cleared my mind, and the pain is gone.
You know, like, the pain is gone.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's the choice that you're talking about.
Yeah.
When you really look into what's really going on in the mind, it's not, it wasn't between the choice between eating and not eating. It just really started way before that.
Yeah.
And then I'm like ending up with this pain here and now, you know?
Right. Yeah. So Aiko gave a very, it's a beautiful example. I'm wondering, because Aiko has been practicing with the course for a couple of years, at least, you know, if not more. And so I'm just wondering if others kind of understand, or maybe it would be helpful, because it's a great example that many of us can use. So I'm wondering if others have questions for Aiko, because you know, depending on where we are coming to attitudinal healing, and, you know, there may be some places that maybe it would be instructive. So does anyone have any questions?
Yeah, well, I have a response. It's not quite a question. That it made a lot of sense to me that this kind of relationship with cheese would happen right now, because there's something about going into the holiday season that you just are constantly hearing about, you know, this, the holiday is supposed to happen, and it's supposed to change you, and it's supposed to be like this. And I think this sense of deprivation can just come from this artificial sense of, now, of course, you go on vacation, and now you go to Christmas, or now you go to Hanukkah, or now you go to whatever. But there's this, or certainly this, you know, now you have to find gifts for everybody that you love, and you're going to get gifts, and all, and the pressure, you know, that builds up. It really made sense that if there's ever going to be a time where you're just going to, oh, eat junk food, let's say, if it's not cheese. It's right now, because and I'd love when you describe just looking in and figuring out, wait, what's going wrong? Or the question that you brought up earlier, what is the real choice here? I wrote that down thinking I have to keep remembering that question, because that's what the crucial thing was, being able to step away and say, okay, what's happening with my body, and why is it happening, and why did I go in this direction? And I appreciated hearing that.
Great.
Yeah,
great.
Yeah, it really went like that. It was just kind of a natural path that I happened to see that time where I knew really it wasn't about cheese.
So what about this feeling, Rosemary, you mentioned it, and Aiko, you mentioned it, this feeling of deprivation, this feeling of lack, you know, can others speak to that? Because I'm sure I know we can feel this in many situations, right?
I can bring up one that I'm kind of struggling with, but it's more like it's at a distance. That I really notice, particularly with kids that are younger, that they're constantly carrying a cell phone, or they're constantly interacting with a computer, and you are having a different kind of conversation. It can even be something where you're watching a television program, but they're sitting there playing a video game on their phone, or maybe talking to friends, and you don't feel like they're there, and sometimes it'll happen at the table. And I've been thinking about, that kind of technology and how it's changing how human beings are interacting. And how do I, you know, you can't ask everybody to put to turn the cell phone off and talk, but I see it changing the way that interaction is taking place. And so that's a, it's not making me ill or something. It's more like just something I'm trying to figure out. What do I do in this world now?
So what if we took that the way Aiko talked about the cheese story, right? What if we took that downward and we look at cell phones and instead of feeling, because it's so easy, like Aiko from, you know, she was thinking, okay, well, eating cheese caused this symptom, right, this pain. And as she traced it down, it was different. It wasn't, the cheese was just, you know, it could have been chocolate, it could be anything, you know, it could have been anything. So if we don't go to the cell phone as the cause and we look at, you know, is this a way, like what people are longing for is connection, right? That's, you know, the opposite, one of the ways, the opposite of deprivation, if I'm feeling lack or, you know, Aiko mentioned about feeling lonely and, you know, we're longing for connection. You know, that goes back to that place of that transcendence. We're longing for this experience that connects me, that grounds me, that feeds me, that nourishes me. And it could look like cheese. It could look like cell phones. It could look like, you know, alcohol. It could look like a relationship. It could look like, you know, sex. It could, do you see how like the common denominator is not, you know, there's many ways that that could be answered. And so it's very easy to kind of look at the top thing, the surface, and feel that's the problem. That's the problem. But it's so deceptive. It's so deceptive. And that's where, you know, that question of, like, what am I really choosing? What is underneath this? And it's that inward process, you know, again. So that is the, how can I say, that's kind of like a skill, you know, this practice of going inside, that we are wanting to develop. We are wanting to support ourselves and each other because that can illuminate what it is, you know, that is underneath a behavior. I guess that's the way to look what's underneath a behavior, what's underneath this desire for, you know, let's say to be on Facebook all the time or whatever it is, Instagram or, you know, whatever it could be.
Hey, that's Molly. When you guys were talking about communication, I had a couple different thoughts in my brain about it. I mean, you talked about the phone for communication. But what we've been using, we want to use the phone for communication in that sense, but at the same time as when the kids are texting and they're doing all that stuff, they're not really communicating with the people that are around us. And so it's kind of like a double-edged sword type of thing. We have phones to feel like we're safe, people that don't want to leave the house without their phones. And communicate that way, but it's about communication, but at the same time, there's fear in that too? Or am I going in two different directions? You hear me?
No, I think it's very good to link it to fear, because we're talking about having to see love and see fear, and sometimes it's like seeing fear. Sometimes when you see somebody who is there and technically you're all supposed to be interacting, but there are these things in the way. I like using alcohol as an example, you know, just certain things that we pretend are opening ourselves up are actually just something to hide behind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The kids are using the iPads now for education, and that's becoming like part of their life, things that, you know, that's their form of communication. Something happened to my son recently. He took a test, and he had the option of having to use the iPad to do searching on the internet to answer the questions that were on the test. But he asked his teacher right before, because he thought he had the option to do it, and then his teacher said he couldn't use the iPad. Well, it turned out after the test was over, he didn't look around. And his friends had actually, in the class, he did have the option of using the iPad to answer the question. So when he found out that he could have used it, He panicked, and he thought, that, oh, my God, I failed this test. He came back to school today, got a test result, and he got 100% on a test that he didn't rely on the Internet for. And I was so proud of him, but at the same time, it's like they rely on that communication so much that there's that fear that they're going to fail because they didn't use that. They didn't trust their gut, didn't trust their souls within themselves, what they've learned. So I think that we are all finding out with communication is that we're not relying on ourselves.
So fear
is coming from outside of us.
Yeah, and so again, you know, it's so hard for us, you know, when we make this inward process, like, it takes a lot of discipline in the mind, and the mind is so habituated to really attach meaning to things, whether they be good or bad, you know.
Yeah.
So iPads are good, iPads are bad. Cell phones are good, cell phones are bad. Internet is good, internet is bad. This is good, this is, you see. So it can get very, again, it can get very complicated, it can get very confusing. And again, that's another, it's a great ego mechanism to kind of keep the ball rolling, but, you know, in a sort of a fearful kind of way. So that's where an experience is helpful to say, an iPad can be helpful, or it may not be necessary, you know. So it's like saying, again, getting beneath it and asking ourselves to get beneath it. Because if we can start to see more simply, like Rosemary was saying, you know, love or fear, if we can really start to simplify it, then things will move on their own. Because like Aiko had this experience of the pain, relief, you know, and she was really just focusing inside, you know. Of course, there's a desire for relief, but at that time, her mind was really, really just involved in, okay, what's going through my mind? What's happening? What happened? And where were my thoughts? What were my emotions? What was I thinking? You know, you see how that just takes your mind off the screen, but the screen sorts itself out, you know, and that's like the it requires trust. I mean, honestly, it requires a lot of trust. But we can share these experiences to kind of, you know, bolster that, you know, to help us with that part, so that we don't, like, so that when we're facing challenging things, we can know how the practice could be, and, you know, we can really be applying ourselves and not, kind of like I know my teacher Patty, you know, would say it's like an inside job. You know, it's really an inside job, and you know, being willing to do that, you know, requires that trust and that commitment. So I just wanted to, you know, kind of put that out there.
Okay. Actually, any situation, the answer will always come from the inside. Because that's where the answer is always located at, in any situation that you can think of. And as far as cell phones and things like that, I think that children are becoming more dependent on them,
mm-hmm.
because they're having a lack of dependence on their own knowledge and their own thoughts and what they think for themselves. They're becoming more dependent on what the cell phone tells them and texting their friends and things like that, where they're afraid to join in situations where they have to be really sociable with the other people and have to be able to talk to them and stuff. And I think
I agree with you, Mel. It's about the trust. It comes down to that trust.
Yes. I don't think they trust themselves to be in situations where they have to interact with people, with their peers, and it's very difficult for them. And I think that's happened in the past with other generations that have turned to other things besides cell phones and stuff like that. They've turned to I think the previous generation has turned to some of them have turned to narcotics.
To give their
strength to interact with other people and to also interact with the world.
Yeah, so I think that's just important. It's just important to just recognize that it still comes down to us trying to meet this need and kind of meeting it in the best way we can. And I think when we can sort of have that perspective, it gives us that space because the whole thing is that you have to remember we're choosing between fear and love, right? And so love and forgiveness, we said they're very connected. And if you'll remember, we also talked about that forgiveness holds the space where we don't jump into judgment and interpretation. Because as soon as we jump into judgment and interpretation, we sort of like seal the case. We've closed it. And so our mind has, you know, made an assumption. And we could be right. You know, we could be right that, let's say, a certain child using a cell phone a certain way is not helping them. But the skillful approach, being a parent of a teenager, you know, the skillful approach, it is helpful to have like this stance that Aiko did, which was, let me just be open here. Let me just, you know, see this. Let me be open to understand this, and then move into that space. If we're in kind of a interpretation or judgment, we're not in that space. So just observe that in our minds, you know, because that's like such a place that's so easy. It's just so easy to go there because we're just so habituated. You know, we're so habituated. And, you know, we've talked about the neuroplasticity, the pathways are there. So, you know, the biology is like making that pathway. And so you can understand we're, you know, this evolutionary leap. So all of the biology is kind of for us and not for us because the change is about to happen. So if we can just understand what it is that we're doing in the mind, you know, like that is so helpful. You know, before we can even talk about someone else and what they're doing, you know, just again, what am I doing in seeing this interaction? And what are the judgments that are coming up for me? And, you know, just clearing that and just being aware of it. It doesn't mean that you gotta, you know, not do what you need to do as a parent. But I find, you know, that when I step into it from that place, I get a much positive reflection, you know, things just move. And there are places where, you know, you gotta step in and say no. But I'm just trying to open this up because, you know, we do things around actions all day, all day long. And I really want this time for us to really be looking in the mind and what's happening because I think, I don't know, I feel like I need support in that area. So I just want to, you know, keep helping us to just keep coming back and asking what's underneath that behavior. You know, what's underneath. Yeah.
Stephen, does that trigger also, how can we see this differently? You started talking, that's exactly where my mind went when you started talking about that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it's like opening to a new perception, a healed perception. And that opening is the step is that step into love, isn't it? Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It takes us away from the judgment.
I'm sorry?
It takes us away from the judgment when we open it up to see it differently.
Yeah, because judgment about anything, I mean, even if it feels like, you know, it's a good thing, like what's happening with the environment or what's happening with the earth or what's happening, I mean, I know this way, it feels so unnatural at the beginning because it feels like, no, this is bad, this is really bad, and I can show you the data and I can show you the science, but it's like, okay, what would be helpful here? You know, how can I see this differently? Am I at peace as I'm talking about this? Do I feel peaceful? You know, if I'm not feeling peaceful, then chances are I'm not coming from a place of love. You know, chances are I'm not in the right mind. So these are just, you know, it's like, it's like practice. I mean, it's just so, especially the things that trigger us, it's so hard not to judge. It's so hard. Yeah.
And I think,
Go on.
I think another thing that I, as I was listening, I was thinking when we see, when we see something from others, for example, I see myself looking at those teenagers who's, you know, at a restaurant, they're just all, you know, like not looking at each other. They're just looking at the phone and, you know, mm-hmm. texting something. And then I see that, and then I, maybe I might feel very sad, or, you know, I might feel like, you know, why are they not talking to each other? That's awful, or something like that. And then I don't like what I'm seeing. I'd rather see something else.
Right.
And at that moment, you know, I just kind of let that go when I just kind of realized, well, I'd rather see something else. This is really sad that they're not talking to each other. I'm seeing isolation. I'm seeing separation. That's what I'm seeing, and I really don't like it. Mm-hmm. And let that go. It's almost like surrendering it and recognizing it as that this is really about separation, isolation, disconnection. And I don't like it. And then that's like when things get opened up for me, when mm-hmm. things start to happen, that I might see something else to make me realize the opposite of that, opposite of, you know, separation and isolation. I mean, I don't really have specific examples, but I've had opportunities to practice this kind of like surrendering into this. I do judge, you know, my mind goes there and I see mm-hmm. things and I think, wow, that person's this and that, and then I realize, well, that's not what I like to see, you know?
Right.
And then ask for, I guess that's forgiveness, is really asking for something else instead.
Yeah.
I don't like this picture, you know?
I kind of ended up, I feel almost guilty for bringing this up because I don't feel that, you know, like when I see my daughter interacting with the cell phone and the television that she's necessarily, you know, depriving herself of something. I actually kind of feel it's more like she's speaking a different language. It's like I know how I process thoughts, and she's processing in a different way a lot of different things at once. So that's all. I do really like what Seema was saying. You don't have to come to a conclusion about it, and I don't have to, but I recognize that there's a different world. There's a different way of perceiving the world. It kind of, you know, like if somebody was tone deaf, you know, they wouldn't hear music the same way, let's say, or at least they wouldn't sing it the same way. But I'm not saying it's the problem with machines that I see often happening is machines start to dictate the path that you take. You know, this is what you're allowed to write, and this is how many characters you can use, and we sometimes forget that we are allowing the limitations of the machine to tell us what we can do as a human being, and occasionally you need to be able to remind yourself that that's a choice.
So let me kind of step in, because here's something that maybe we can practice, and Aiko has alluded to it, and I'm just going to just kind of, you know, even highlight it if I can. So when we see whatever we're seeing, okay, someone using a cell phone, not using a cell phone, let's just take that, or even like, let's say the environment, or someone eating a certain way, or whatever it is, let's try to see that when we see that image, right? I could use the word, the picture or the image, right? First of all, just seeing this event or picture or image, and then coming into our mind and saying, okay, what am I feeling? What am I thinking? What is my interpretation of this? And just letting that be a practice. Just seeing how you are seeing things. You know, how this, I mean, we've talked about this at the last call too. I think Emil brought it up, just sitting with yourself for 15 minutes and just watching what's happening. Because gradually you will start to see, well, you'll start to have interesting observations. If I'm feeling a certain way, I'm going to see things like you could see a group of teenagers and they're texting and they're talking and texting, and you're going to see, oh, look at that, you know, that vivacious energy that teenagers have. You might just see that because that's what you chose to see. Or you could see, well, it's really sad. This is very isolating. So you see how it's not about what's happening on the screen, it's what's happening in your mind, it's the interpretation in your mind. And let's just use these things, whatever our things are, you know, for someone it's something, for someone else it's something else, not right or wrong about the merits of a cell phone or not the merits or the internet or, you know, the environment. I really want to, you know, steer away from that. That's not the purpose of these calls. The purpose is for us to be aware of our attitudes and see what interpretation we're choosing. And like Aiko said, that we can choose differently. We can choose to see this very situation differently. Or, you know, we can choose to have a different interpretation. Like Rosemary said, you know, this is her daughter's way of processing. Or this is my son's downtime. This is the way he unwinds, you know, and so on and so forth. So I think it will be a great practice if we can see that there's like this one thing happening outside and this whole other world within, and you know, really look into that and just see what comes up for us. Okay.
Definitely. Yeah.
All right. Okay, well, actually, we're kind of over, and just for I said it in the email, but there won't be a call next week. We will resume the first week of January, and just thank you all for really sharing and participating. And you know, this is so helpful because we're really helping each other, and it's like, you know, this one mind. Even though we look like we're separate and we have all these different issues, it's really similar. It's more similar than not. So I just want to wish everyone a wonderful, happy, peaceful holiday, and thank you for your participation, your willingness, and I look forward to seeing you all remotely or through the internet next year.
Thank you.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
Okay.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.